Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. A lot of interesting things happening in the world politically. And today's guest, Debbie Kolb, has worked as a journalist in Washington for two decades, covering politics for Gannett News Service, Congressional Quarterly, The Hill. We'll talk a little politics, but also talk about this wonderful new book she's written that my wife and I both love. And my wife's a teacher in Studio City Elementary School, and she's found a way to introduce kids to politics and to our iconic first president, George Washington, and her new book, The President and Me, George Washington and the Magic Hat. So you can get that online at Amazon or wherever books are sold, and it really has a wonderful story about this boy named Sam who goes back in time to connect with the first president, George Washington. So we'll be back in 20 seconds with Debbie, and don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Debbie. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much, Richard. I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, when my wife and I got engaged and were dating back in the D.C. area, and it was spring and the blossoms were out, those beautiful cherry blossoms I think the Japanese gave to us. Are those, when do they come out back there?
Well, it depends on the weather. They've sort of come and gone at this point, but we have a lot of other trees, dogwoods and some others that are in bloom right now. The cherry blossoms, it's really late March to any time around mid-April, but this year they were a little on the early side.
Hmm. I love your book, The President and Me, George Washington and the Magic Hat. Yeah, is Amazon, or where would you tell people to get it?
Yeah, right now it is available on Amazon, and at the end of around the 28th of the month, it will be also available at all other bookstores and at BarnesandNoble.com. But Amazon got a little ahead that they are selling it already, which is exciting. So, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, the world's really changed from just having to have the bookstores we drive to and now ordering online. When I was a boy, it's interesting, I love your story, because when I was a boy, I had an uncle that worked in the government in D.C. there, who's since passed. But I have great childhood memories of visiting him and my Aunt Margie, who's still with us, visiting all the sites and going to Mount Vernon and seeing the different things. So this story, and it was written, you really got in the head of a young boy and the things he thinks about. How did you decide to tell this story?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is a real departure for me in terms of what I've written in the past, because I've written other books and edited other books, but they've been for adults, not for kids, and they've been very serious books about politics and government and history. And this ties in terms of presidents, which I've written about before, and history. But this is my first book for kids, and it's my first published fiction. And like a lot of journalists and former journalists, I have, various fiction manuscripts that I tried to write sitting in a closet somewhere, but this is the first one that actually got published, so it's very exciting. And it comes out of my own interest in history and in politics, but I wanted to try to write something for kids this time, and it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so we have a connection to a lot of his early history when he was very, very young.
Yeah.
In fact, at the Pittsburgh Airport, when you land there and you first approach the escalator to go get baggage, there's a big statue of George Washington. I know we got a lot of kind of crazy political stuff going on. What's your take on, someone like George Washington seems mythic, almost like an iconic, almost religious figure. And
yeah.
I mean, do you think these founding fathers were of a higher stature in a sense, or is it just mythic? Or because now it seems like politics, it's very entertaining. I'm kind of enjoying the Trump show immensely, but it's almost like a circus feel to it today compared to then. Or do you think, was humanity always like that? Where if they had TV and internet, would they be slinging the mud? I don't know. What do you think?
That's so interesting to think about. I think that there were definitely political fights and infighting back then as well. I think George Washington himself somehow transcended most of that. I mean, he ran unopposed. He was sort of the choice of almost everybody to be the first president of the United States. And as I was doing the research for the book, you know, it just reinforced how much respect people had for him and just everything about him, his bearing, the way he, you know, moved and spoke, and he engendered a lot of respect. I don't think there's anyone today that would be in that same category, but I think that what's happened today, and, you know, it has a lot to do with technology, with the media, with how people get their news compared to in his day. It was such a different world. So it's hard to really make a direct comparison. But there definitely, once he was a lame duck, or once he was sort of stepped down from being president, there was a lot of political infighting and factionalism. So it was going on back then, too.
Mm. Yeah, I guess human nature doesn't change.
Yeah.
I really like the magic in the story, too. Not to give away too much, but he's in the gift shop and he puts on his hat. Was that something that came to you, you know, some of these subconscious things that come, or how did you decide that the hat would be the instrument to transport him back in time to meet George Washington?
Yeah, well, it was, I actually went to Mount Vernon with various family members, and we ended up buying a hat. Now, of course, it wasn't a magic hat. It wasn't an old hat the way it was in my book. But we went because I was starting to do research on the book, and I was thinking, well, the hat would be a good way to do it because, you know, it's something that is such an iconic image of that time period that men wore those tri-cornered black hats. And I thought, you know, that would be really fun because when my character, Sam, who's just a regular everyday kid from Maryland who goes on this field trip with his class, goes into the Mount Vernon gift shop, and he's having a lot of issues. His best friend isn't speaking to him anymore. His best friend is kind of ignoring him and hanging out with these other boys, and he hasn't got his class is doing a play about George Washington, and he generally gets the lead role, but he was not cast as George Washington. He's just a regular soldier, so he's feeling kind of bad about stuff, and he goes in the gift shop with the other kids, and he feels somehow drawn to buy this hat, which he doesn't even want to buy the hat. He wants to buy some cool spy gadget that he sees on a different shelf, but the hat, to me, just seemed like that's such a perfect thing, because he puts the hat on, and all of a sudden he's back in the 18th century meeting George Washington at different points in George's life. So, but as soon as he takes off the hat, he is back in the 21st century, like sitting in his house. And he doesn't, some of the humor in the book is that he doesn't want to leave these fascinating discussions with George Washington, but somehow he ends up with his hat knocked off, and all of a sudden, right in the middle of this adventure, there he is back in Bethesda, Maryland, in the modern day, you know. So the hat was just a good way to do it. Sort of, you put it on, you end up back, or you take it off, you end up at home again. So, yeah.
And I remember the hat. He was talking to him through the hat when he was on the bus and thinking it was a horse ride like that.
Exactly. I mean, he's on the bus going back from Mount Vernon, and he doesn't really realize that this hat is anything special. And then all of a sudden, the hat starts to talk to him. So the hat takes on a personality of its own, and it's a very cranky, sort of cantankerous kind of hat. And it knew George Washington, so it kind of doles out little bits and pieces of information to Sam about George Washington. But once they're on one of these time travel adventures, the hat doesn't say anything. So Sam has no idea often where he is, like where the hat has sent him back to. And I picked out some pretty important times during George Washington's life to send Sam back to, like, you know, Valley Forge, when in order, sort of, he first meets him as a teenager, and then he meets him again when he's in the French and Indian Wars as a colonel. He meets him when he's about to marry Martha Washington, and then at the Battle of Valley Forge, and then when George is being sworn in as the first president. And then the last two chapters actually are during the crossing of the Delaware, which goes out of chronological order, but that's just such a crucial image about George Washington, that picture that, you know, of him with the crossing of the Delaware. So I sort of wanted to put Sam right into that as well.
Mm. Yeah, and you really, I like how you empower this boy, and you write the mindset of this young boy so well,
at this age
where, yeah, and his friend is now in with the baseball guys that he plays baseball with. And all of a sudden, he's sitting by himself on the bus, not quite in the clique. And this adventure really empowers him. Where did you come up with the idea that an iconic figure could empower somebody? I think that's a really powerful thing. I growing up, just love biographies, and sometimes would even use my imagination as a kid. If I was having a problem like I was facing, I would imagine what would this person from the past that's my hero, what would they tell me to do? And I would come up with great advice that they would tell me. But, of course, it was coming from my own mind, but I would imagine they were telling me. That's a great device to empower him in the end.
As I wrote the book, I had an outline, but I wasn't entirely sure what would happen. So the characters did sort of take on, you know, their own life in a sense. I know a lot of authors say that they sort of, you know, you let your characters go where they want. And I sort of had this idea that Sam was going through a tough time and that he would learn something from these meetings back and forth with George Washington. But I wasn't entirely sure how that would work out, how it would go. And it sort of all clicked as I was writing it. So it sort of came together as I was doing it. I had, the outline was really vague. And the outline was more, you know, I think of the book as sort of being on two tracks. You have the part of the scenes in history where he's meeting George at various points, and then the part where he is back in his regular life. And that's really what I wanted to create, not so much have Sam be, you know, sort of just this device to get you back in time to learn about George Washington, but really have Sam have a very strong present-day existence, so you cared about him as a person. And I think that kids who are into history and want to learn about presidents, this is a great thing for them. But I also think that kids who might not necessarily be so into history would really like it too, because they can relate to the idea of friendship, about, you know, having someone who's your best friend suddenly ignoring you. That's something everyone can really relate to. So, you know, it sort of came together as it went along.
Wow, this is really fascinating. So you all can get this book now at Amazon, The President and Me, George Washington and the Magic Hat, Debbie Kalb. Is it Kalb?
It's Kalb, yeah.
Kalb.
Yeah, and it's going to be a series, actually. This is the first
series. I was going to ask if there's other presidents. Abraham Lincoln pops up in your book, is mentioned. Do you know yet who are some of the presidents you want to...
I'm thinking of going in order, actually, at least to start out. So I'm starting to do some research now on John and Abigail Adams, and that'll be the next one.
Wow, well, then you'll have a book series that'll, like, go on even more than Harry Potter went on. I could see this being filmed
really
for kids.
Going, could
this
decades.
Could be a film or TV series for kids to teach them, too.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, and we have some questions coming in. By the way, if you want to text or email, you could email a question to richardrossilive@gmail.com or text it to 818-850-5915, 818-850-5915. Ruben of Florida asks what your take is on some of the perceived outsider candidates, Trump and Sanders surging, if those two popular movements, what they might say about the mood of our country and, you know, if people feel like we've fallen away from that certain innocence of George Washington, and so there's this populist movements that he references happening right now.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. I think that, you know, you can look at it a number of ways, but one thing to think about is that, you know, before, well, I actually just recently edited an update of a book called Guide to U.S. Elections, so I've been thinking about this a lot, and the book came out a few months ago, and it was an update of a reference book that's been out, you know, that hadn't been updated for about 6 years. And we stopped doing the updating right after the 2014 elections. We went through that, and then we kind of added in stuff for the few months into 2015. And I think at the time that, you know, in the, say, the middle of 2015, a lot of people, experts, were assuming that this could be one of these dynastic, you know, talking about history, I mean, you think about presidential dynasties, and people were thinking it would be a Bush versus a Clinton, and you would have a representative from the Bush family against a representative from the Clinton family, and what did that say about American politics and, you know, the fact that this would be the third Bush or the second Clinton? And there's a lot of talk about that. Well, instead, everything completely changed, and, you have this surge of interest in Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, who are both complete, you know, presenting themselves as outsiders to the political system. You have Ted Cruz doing very well, who is a senator, and so is Bernie Sanders, but they are senators who have presented themselves as outsiders, not going along with the establishment. And ironically, the establishment on the Republican side has tended to coalesce recently around Ted Cruz because they don't want to see Donald Trump. So it's gone a completely different way than what so many people had expected less than a year ago.
Yeah, I have to admit that I thought, like you said, the whole dynastic thing, I thought Jeb Bush a year or two ago, I was thinking he would do much, much better. And I was astounded that he spent, I think, $100 million, they say, in ads. I don't know if that's accurate, but and then Trump spent like maybe $1 million because he got so much free press by saying outrageous things. And Jeb Bush just seemed to tank. I mean, did that surprise you or not really?
Yeah, it did. It did. I mean, I didn't make any predictions myself about who would end up winning that nomination, but I think the whole Trump phenomenon took many people by surprise, and I think Jeb Bush was expected to do better. And, you know, if you were reading all the commentary, the idea was, well, you know, Trump said this, so therefore his support will collapse, and Jeb Bush will come in and you know, be the one that people will turn to, and that just never happened. And it was, I think it surprised people, definitely, because I think they expected him to, given all the support he had and the money he was putting into it, they expected him to do much better than he did.
And they're talking now, and I really, quite frankly, am confused and not understanding and all, but about the whole brokered convention possibility. That could, I mean, they say that there could even be an outsider come in there. So it certainly is.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
an interesting dynamic because it's really been so long since a convention was anything more than just sort of a televised spectacle that was very much predictable. You know, it was not, nothing surprising was going to happen. And then this year, all of a sudden, the convention is becoming really relevant, which it hasn't been for so long. Because, yeah, the whole process of how the delegates are chosen, it really varies a lot from state to state. And you have situations now where there's, especially Trump and Cruz, are fighting over delegates who, you know, certain states, they have delegates that there may be a certain outcome to the primary, but then at the convention, those delegates can become unpledged. And then the whole convention, if they don't vote for someone on the first ballot, then it's really up in the air. So, yeah, there's talk that various people could come in who were not even one of the people running, who never did run this year. Someone else like Mitt Romney or, you know, somebody else could come in and be named the candidate or the nominee because there's not enough support for any of the ones who are currently running. So it's a fascinating process.
Yeah, certainly a lot different from all the support to have George Washington as the first president, huh?
Of course, it's like the opposite. It's absolutely fascinating to think about what George Washington might say if he saw what was going on today, yeah.
We might have to get Sam's hat to figure that out.
I know. Definitely.
Yeah, some people I know have criticized our founding fathers. One issue is slavery, but apparently Washington was one. May have been the only one, from what I've heard, that arranged in his will to free the slaves. So it seemed like he was.
He was a slaveholder, and he did talk about freeing them in his will, and he. In a sense, that was, you know, the whole thing, I do get into that in the book, and it's one of those questions that's very hard to understand. How could someone who's the father of the country and who was involved in creating this country based on liberty and equality, how could he have been a slaveholder? And it's something that my character, Sam, just does not understand, and it's very hard to understand, and he, you know, it's something that comes up a lot throughout the book, and it's one of those questions that people wrestle with. How could that have been? Yeah, and I wanted to address that in the book, so that's definitely a theme that runs throughout.
Well, that was pretty
it.
Gutsy for you, because it would have been easier in a children's book to skirt around stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's something that really I felt that had to be in the book, because it's something that is so hard to understand, and it's something that I think that a fifth grader who, like Sam, would be wondering about. Why would this be happening? How could this be? You know, so it's definitely, it was something I felt that sort of just had to be in the book. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Sam as a character because he has that, that we all have that child inside of us that, you know, feels rejected when our friends, you know, seem to find new friends and not include us.
Of course,
Or it's very idealistic and black and white about things. And, you know, these are the kind of questions a smart kid's going to think about, you know, be it in our founding fathers having slaves, or, you know, even biblical passages, slaves obey your masters. And a lot of people just don't want to look at that question, that why do some of these iconic people, iconic books and different things that seem to, you know, not condemn it the way we condemn it now.
No, it's just something that I think, if you're talking about the founding fathers, the ones who are from the southern states, it's just something you have to address. Yeah. So I think Sam, as a character, I mean, it was a lot of fun writing him and sort of getting a feel for what his adventures would be like when he was interacting with a society that was different from today. And I there's a lot of humor in the book too, because it's, you know, he ends up in he takes back a neighbor boy with him to one of the to like the French and Indian Wars, and the boy is really into his neighbor.
Was
really
that
into
was that
Star
Oliver?
Wars and he, no, Oliver, no. No, he takes him back, and they have an interesting adventure, too. But when he takes his neighbor, JP, back with him, and JP is really into Star Wars, and so he's holding this Lego Star Wars figure, and George Washington's looking at the Lego Star Wars figure, and he's like, oh, this is so interesting, a ship that flies in the stars, you know. And it is something George Washington might have, you know, found interesting. I mean, as a military person, you know, a Star Wars ship, and so, you know, I just had a lot of fun with that kind of thing. Like, what would happen if, you know, if they were referring to things that were very different? So, I mean, it has a serious stuff in it, like slavery, but it has a lot of things in it that are a lot of humor in it too. So I tried to sort of balance out the serious part with things that were, you know, that were sort of cross-cultural things that were maybe a little less serious. You know, obviously much less serious. Yeah.
Yeah, it has a nice balance of, like, the external action and adventure, but then I like it as an adult, the internal change that he feels very empowered, and he's going to be okay, and that this encounter with history and George Washington, he has this, you know, he kind of comes out of a little bit of that malaise of just being in middle school. I guess he would be a middle school kid?
Well, he's fifth grade, so it's the last year of elementary school. So it's an age when kids are, you know, they're the oldest kids in the elementary school. They're getting ready to go to middle school. It's just a time of real transition for kids. And I thought that was a fun age to look at, as far as, you know, having the characters. And the next book will also have, you know, some of the kids that are minor characters in this book are going to be the main characters in the second book. So I wanted to sort of look at these fifth graders and have each of them have these kind of adventures. And you're looking at, you know, in the second book, it would be his across the street neighbors, who JP, who I mentioned, and his stepsister, Ava, who's also in the first book. And they have an issue with the blended family and how they get along. And that's something I wanted to look at for the next book. So that'll be, you know, and how to fit that in with the history as well. So, yeah.
Philadelphia is a nice place, too. I grew up in Pennsylvania for a lot of the history, and Mount Vernon. There's so many wonderful places still preserved, but yet our country's so young, so it's, you know, compared to Europe and everything. So it's so interesting that you take these kids back and reconnect them with this this figure. I could see you going to some schools and maybe reading some of your book to some of the kids.
I'm really hoping to do that. In fact, I have one tentative thing lined up for somewhere here in the D.C. area, and then I'm hoping to do a lot more of that because I think that that is a wonderful way to sort of introduce kids to historical figures or try to get them to sort of – what I tried to do with the book, like I said earlier, it's not just for kids who love history. It's for kids who – just for any kids, because I think that there's history in there, but I sort of tried to slip it in a way that was, you know, entertaining and was where it was a character, a modern-day character who you could really relate to, who was having these experiences and trying to just sort of build it around him and that he's a figure that kids can relate to. Even if maybe you can't really relate to George Washington, you can certainly relate to Sam. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's making me want to go back to Mount Vernon. We had a little Super 8 movie camera and took footage. I still have a footage of our trip when I was actually younger than Sam visited all these sites with Washington. I remember he was a farmer, too, and they had a lot about his growing. He was a pretty extensive farmer, wasn't he?
He was, and he was Mount Vernon. He really just wanted, at the end of the war, he wanted to get back home, spend time on his farm. And, you know, he was reluctant in terms of getting involved in politics again, but he was sort of everybody wanted him to be the first president, understandably enough. So he had to leave Mount Vernon, but he always sort of was pining to get back there. And I tried to show that in the book, that he really was very much someone who wanted to be at home and to be with Martha at Mount Vernon and maybe not have to deal with all of these challenges and burdens that people are always giving him. But he, you know, I think that as a character, I tried to sort of make him be, to sort of show that he's this very iconic character, but also show some humor in it too, in terms of his relationship with Sam, because Sam is always 10 years old, whereas George, you know, ages, because Sam runs into him at various points in his life, but George never seems to notice that Sam is like still 10. So, you know, when they first meet, Sam is 10 and George is a teenager, and they keep meeting until George is much, much older as the president. But he's always like, oh, hi, Sam. It's so good to see you again. You know, and 20 years might have gone by and Sam's still 10, but he never notices anything. So it's funny.
I love the time travel thing, too, you know, ever since Einstein's theory about light, and if we travel faster than the speed of light, we could possibly see the past and, you know, that we're seeing stars out there that are actually what we're seeing is in the past. And so this whole thing about thinking about going back in time is so fascinating. I love all those, you know, Somewhere in Time and those different movies where people do it. So that is just such a nice device. Where's the best place for people that want to connect with you in the book?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am setting up a new website that's deborahkalb.com. So it's deborahkalb.com. Another way is through a website that I have, which is based on a book my father and I wrote a while ago called Haunting Legacy. So you can look also at hauntinglegacy.com, and that has a contact me form on that. So, the deborahkalb.com site should be up and running soon. And also there's going to be a President's and Me website as well. But really any of those places.
Well, thank you for this wonderful book, Debbie, and we look forward to the future ones. And I could see this on becoming a series on one of the cable stations that does programming for kids. This would be great, and because it's just so visual, so such a wonderful story you've written.
Thank you very much, Richard. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Well, I've enjoyed talking with you, and all the best to you and your family, and to
your young son,
who probably really helped you get this Sam character right with his feedback, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Debbie. We really loved having you on, and thank you to all of you for listening today. And I hope it whets your appetite to get Debbie's book, George Washington and the Magic Hat, The President and Me, and to maybe look into some history and what a wonderful political process is happening right now in our country in terms of interest and all kind of crazy stuff, but so fascinating to watch history unfold. Thank you for tuning in, and have a blessed day. Thank you for joining us at Richard Rothby Live.